Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Abubakar Saad, who is a professor of history at Western Connecticut State University, where he researches issues related to the history of the Middle East and Arab unity. He's originally from Benghazi, Libya, and worked for the Libyan government prior to Muammar Gaddafi's coup. He stayed in a government employee, eventually working for several years as Gaddafi's translator. And in the 1970s, he and others plotted to overthrow Gaddafi. Professor Saad had to flee the country when the plot fell apart, and he is now a U.S. citizen. Welcome to Background Briefing, Abubakar Saad.
Thank you.
And your former hometown of Benghazi, Libya, is of course is both the focus of so much of this political campaign in terms of the foreign policy issues, and the Romney campaign is trying to stir the pot here. It seems to be their central issue in attacking Obama's foreign policy, and if it's inevitably going to come up in tomorrow night's final debate, which is about foreign policy. But I'd like to talk to you because you know Libya, you're in touch with what's going on there. And it seems to me that almost everything we're hearing in both the attacks on Obama's handling of the situation at the consulate in Benghazi and the defense that the White House has put out are so muddled that they completely miss the context. So give us some context here about what's really going on in Benghazi.
Well, Benghazi, as many of the Libyan cities and towns, it is not just Benghazi. The whole country, after the regime of Muammar Gaddafi collapsed, sort of fell in the hands of various militias, and you have all of these militias in towns and villages, and some of these militias are urban militias in the cities, and some of these militias are tribal militias that controlled by certain tribes, and you have the regional militias. So you really have a hodgepodge of all sorts of militias that the central government that's currently in Libya virtually has no control over them. They act on their own. Actually, the central government itself comes under attack from them almost on a weekly basis. It is, you know, we don't hear about those incidents because it doesn't involve us. But believe me, it is a very chaotic situation in Libya, and conflicts and clashes and fights are going on a weekly basis.
Well, there's apparently substantial battles going on in Bani Walid.
Exactly.
Which is the area loyal to...
Bani Walid is still actually holding up their views of Gaddafi. They're actually still flying Gaddafi's flag, and they are refusing to recognize the central government that has been taking over the country for almost a year now. They never recognized it. And they don't want to surrender those who had committed crimes during the regime. Many of the regime dignitaries of Gaddafi's regime are actually hiding in Bani Walid, and they are not giving them up. And the military, the regime's army, which is very weak, and some of the militias are actually besieging Bani Walid, and there is a sullies of rounds and fire going on between the two sides for more than a week now. So it is, and that's only just one example, because we have so many other areas. So basically, these militias are well armed, and they can react on a notice, you know, in a moment's notice. So really, they are not really under control of anybody.
So there have been reports, of course, that Gaddafi's son Hamis was captured in Bani Walid, and that's been mm-hmm. denied. Also, his spokesman is supposed to have been captured, and then the spokesman issued a tape saying that he hasn't been captured.
Exactly. Well, the two examples that you have just mentioned gives you an indication of how chaotic it is.
Right.
You know, it's in itself that's a proof that really nobody knows exactly what's going on, and everybody is creating rumors against the other side and so forth. It is, you know, the country is really restless. It is, I mean, I hate to use this word, but it is lawless in a sense.
So we don't know what's happening with Hamis, whether he's alive or not. That's Gaddafi's son, and we don't know what happened with Musa Ibrahim.
And actually, right? Even in Libya, they actually don't know. Right. Everybody is actually guessing, speculating, because of the chaotic situation. Because if they have control over the territories, they can tell you who's in and who's out. But right now, they don't. I mean, Libya's borders are virtually open. Anybody can walk in and walk out anytime. There's no control whatsoever of Libya's border. So those individuals or those groups, they can actually move in and out as they wish.
So, again, I'm speaking with Aboubakar Saad, a professor of history at Western Connecticut State University. He originally is from Benghazi, Libya, and worked for the Libyan government prior to Muammar Gaddafi's coup. He stayed a government employee, eventually working for several years as Gaddafi's translator. And in the 1970s, he and others plotted to overthrow Gaddafi. Professor Saad had to flee the country when the plot fell apart, and he's now a U.S. citizen. So back to Benghazi again, which has become a political football in this presidential campaign, but nothing that either side is saying about it really does present the picture of why things happened the way they did. So walk us through your understanding of what happened on that night, which, of course, happened to be on the anniversary of 9/11.
Exactly. It is basically coincided with the anniversary of 9/11 and also coincided with the Egyptian demonstrations against the film that video that has been published at that particular time. The two events happened exactly on the same day. There are some speculation that actually what happened is there's some group of people that are not so large, probably in the tens or if less than 100, who were basically trying to protest in a similar protest as the one that took place in Cairo earlier that morning. What happened is because there are several militias in Benghazi, and some of those militias are really anti-U.S. and anti-the West. What they did, they took advantage of the situation, and all of a sudden, those less than 100 people dispersed immediately, and that particular group carried out their attack. It's a spontaneous attack, but of course, it is attack that has been building up because of the fact that they don't like the U.S. They are extremist Islamist groups who are among those militias, and they have their own militias. It doesn't mean that really has been planned for months and so forth and all of these kind of analysis that we've been hearing all around. No, it was a spontaneous, but it was carried by a specific group. And that specific group did all of the damage. And I am not surprised because the clashes are going on a weekly basis and all around the country.
And it seems that pretty much we know who that group was. And the leader of the group has been quite defiant. He's been interviewed on Al Jazeera.
Exactly. Ansar, it's called Ansar Sharia. And Ansar Sharia is a group that actually have multi-branches. It has a branch in Benghazi. It has a branch in Tripoli. It has a branch in Tunisia, in Tunis. It has a branch in Algeria. They are what we lump them together throughout the Muslim world as the Salafis, which really an extreme conservative interpretation of the religion of Islam.
And the Salafis, of course, in Egypt were financed by Saudi Arabia.
They just carry different names.
Right,
all have the same ideas. They all belong to that umbrella that we call the Salafis. But in reality, all of them are basically with different titles, with different locations. But they all have the same extra conservative interpretation of the religion.
I was going to say they've been financed largely by Saudi Arabia, the Salafist party that came in second in the Egyptian.
Not only Saudi Arabia, there are so many conservative Muslims, wealthy conservative Muslims all around the Muslim world who actually provide for these people.
So what's your understanding then of what can be done? President Obama, in his second debate when he was challenged on this issue about and Romney was trying to make some hay out of it. I think the president essentially made Romney look like a fool because he had his facts wrong. But that's not going to stop them from keep hammering away at this, and it'll happen again tomorrow, I'm sure.
Yeah.
What is the president has vowed to bring those people to justice. So if the leader of Ansar al-Islam there in what's the name again? Ansar al-Sharia in Benghazi is defiant and appearing on television and laughing at the Americans. Is there any way that Obama can be good to his word and bring those responsible to justice?
I'm sure he can be good to his word, but the problem is there's no proof whatsoever that they have. It is all rhetoric that's going on. Even that leader of the group is actually using rhetoric, and he's challenging the West, and he's challenging the United States. But, when you are going after a criminal, you need evidence. And that's basically what should be done right now. And actually, that's going on at this moment. There is a team of our FBI that's already in Libya that is investigating exactly who is responsible and how it happened and all of the details of it. Until that is done, all what you're going to hear is political rhetoric from all sides.
But what once they make that decision, and assuming it is Ansar al-Sharia and this leader, how will they arrest him?
Well, then they have to go after him. But the problem is we don't really have the solid evidence that who did what and who carried what, because everybody's pointing the finger at everybody else. We all have to be patient with the investigation that's going on right now. Until that investigation is completed, all you're going to hear is political rhetoric from all sides, because they really don't have the facts.
I understand that.
Anybody can say, I'm going to bring him to justice, and I'm not going to bring him to justice, I'm going to attack him, and all of that kind of stuff. You're going to hear it from all parties.
Right.
But in reality, nobody can do anything until we finally have a report from the investigation team saying who's exactly responsible for that, and then we can go after that.
Right, but that's my question. Given the lawlessness of the country, the layers of different militias, and the inability of the central government to have control over the country, let alone over Benghazi, who is going to do the actual arrest?
Well, it has to be some sort of a cooperation, because you have to remember this. This is a country right now is in a chaotic situation that they had started rebuilding their army from scratch. They are rebuilding their police force from scratch, and they are not making a good headway in either one of them. So here, they really don't even have the means to arrest these people. Look at what's going on in Beni Waleed. They have people, and they know that these people are in Beni Waleed, and they can't reach him. So here, what happens is once we find who is really responsible, we can help that particular authority in order to arrest that. And I mean, they can't do it on their own. We have to give them a help in order to actually arrest those responsible.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here, Abu Bakr Saad.
Thank you very much for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Abu Bakr Saad, who's professor of history at Western Connecticut State University, where he researches issues related to the history of the Middle East and Arab unity. He's originally from Benghazi, Libya, and he worked for the Libyan government prior to Muammar Gaddafi's coup. He stayed a government employee, eventually working for several years as Gaddafi's translator. And in the 1970s, he and others plotted to overthrow Gaddafi. Professor Saad fled the country when the plot fell apart, and he's now a U.S. citizen. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for streaming and podcasting at ianmasters.com, where we welcome your comments. And the conversation continues online at facebook.com/ianmastersmedia. And I'll be back again with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. And
disappeared, but have